Next case on our calendar is 96-1329, Timothy Pauley versus Patricia Pauley. Justice Resnick has recused herself from this case. We're very pleased to have sitting in place of Justice Resnick, Judge Cynthia Lazarus, a judge of the Court of Appeals sitting in the 10th Appellate District. Welcome, Judge Lazarus. Mr. Robinson.
With this case, we're asking to bring a uniform system with respect to child support cases of shared parenting. Such a system as we propose today will be consistent with the court's child support guidelines in full custody cases. So we have to look to those parents who are involved with children more than every other weekend. We believe it will assist in promoting shared parenting.
Counsel, all of those goals seem worthy and perhaps achieved by the argument you advance. But would there not be a downside, and that is a discouragement of something that I assume you deem worthy, and that is shared parenting? Wouldn't many be discouraged from considering shared parenting if your approach is adopted?
Judge, I think it's the opposite. We're dealing, for example, with the case here, Tim Baldwin is $16,000 a year. The court order right now is approximately $4,000 in child support. So he has a net pre-tax of $12,000. And it's tough for a man or a woman in that position to be involved with their children on an extensive basis when you have those expenses that go along with having your children with you when you make that kind of money. At least with the shared parenting program that gives him a credit for that time, he has those extra dollars, or she has those extra dollars in the pocket for the children. I don't see what the downside.
The shared parenting requires agreement to undertake that. So, isn't there a risk that a mother, wife, who is perhaps has the children more at the time than the father, looks at that approach and says, well,
there's always that risk. I don't disagree with that. But with our child support guidelines that we've come to accept now over several years of experience, before it was what you could negotiate in law. We now have a consistent, predictable child support figure that we as attorneys can tell our clients, that the court can tell the litigants what it will be. With a system in place that attaches also to shared parenting, I think both mothers and fathers will come to accept that as a problem.
In your fact pattern, the acronym is PLEAD, but again, drawing a law that fit everybody, you have somebody that makes $200,000, his wife makes $15,000, his ex-wife makes $15,000, and he goes for shared parenting because it reduces his child obligation by half. The equity is being much, much more stretched there, because my always understanding of child support was so that the home situations would be a little more equalized in terms of the availability of things available for the child. You don't have this horrible discrepancy between one home and the other just because the divorce occurred. In those situations, the equity is being less available, whereas the solution advocated by the counsel, I believe, if I understand it correctly, is you don't make an automatic deduction, but the court can look at the equities and say the equities in this case is in your client's case favor a deduction because he makes so little. Isn't that a more flexible and fairer rule? And it still would your client may still benefit from it because the court can look at your client's case and say it applies?
Your Honor, if I could answer that, looking at the flip side, I make $200,000, I am in custody. My ex-wife makes $20,000 and is a non-custodial parent. She still has to pay me child support under the guidelines. And so the answer to that is,
Is it just not equitable? That's your answer to my question, rather than trying to find an equitable solution?
Well,
I agree that's not equitable, but...
I think what we're trying to do there, though, to answer your question, we're forcing the court to look at the factors under 31 revised code for a deviation each and every time. And so, equities aside, there's judicial economy. Then what happens when we don't agree with the subjective decision of the administrative trial court? If you have the money, you can appeal it off. And then we just get further and further clogged up in our system. And the problem as I see it, and this might not answer your question, I'm from Toledo. We now know based upon the magistrate's decision that we look at this as a question of deviation. Factors should be deviated. If I drive 22 miles to the south to Wood County in Bowling Green, they are saying, here's a child support worksheet for dad, here's one for mom, let's net them out. Is that fair that we're deciding child support by geography? And the cases, and there's going to be important cases, of course, in the state right now are all over the place. And we need the consistency, the predictability of a system that is in place that will allow us as both attorneys and clients to understand where we're going and what the child support would be. The majority of cases.
Counsel, we're faced here with statutory scheme and although I think that this is a tough statutory construction case because the statutes appear to conflict when once you, well, the 20, you know, C conflict, seems to conflict with B or 6, E6A. But doesn't, you know, when we're faced with such a thing, are we not obliged in our role as in the judicial branch to follow the statutory, it looks to me like 6A is so expressed, it relates to this very scenario. Shared parenting shall be done by the worksheet.
Through the worksheet, that's E6A.
Sure.
And this court, back in the Mark case in 92, said that the child support guidelines were mandatory. So there's tension there, but there's two other provisions that we can look at, and I
agree with you that you can look at those other two and think, boy, this all doesn't make sense. But when you have to choose among them, shouldn't we go with the one that is so expressed and specific to our scenario?
Your Honor, the express and specific one is 3113.215C, where it says, a parent's child support obligation for a child for whom the parent is the residential parent shall be presumed to be spent on that child and shall not become a part of the child support order.
Mm-hmm.
Reading that with 3109.04K.
It says both the residential parents.
It's as specific as it is a provision.
But it isn't because it's B6A. Speaks to what we have here, shared parenting child support.
Shall be calculated pursuant.
Where the residential mothers, you have to, you know, I agree with you, it's there, but isn't it specific? We are talking, it's talking about what is residential parent. And then you have to go to another to know that residential parents and the shared parenting are both. I don't know, I mean, I agree it's a tough call.
I think you bring them together, there is a consistency there that's telling us that we must get give a automatic credit for that time.
But it's interesting that in six, you know, B6, if it were that clear, where B6 says, okay, now we're talking about shared parenting, it doesn't reference C, it doesn't, you know, it doesn't speak to the worksheet subject to, you know, C. You would think that was the way it should be read. It might have been written with that reference to C, subject to C, worksheet, but C.
I mean, I was legislation was addressed.
Yes, I know.
But I think at the time it was written, shared parenting wasn't as involved as it is now. We're moving toward, you know, encouraging people
to do it.
To shared parenting.
Is it possible that C is a leftover from the days of joint custody where only one parent served as the named residential parent, and that's why it doesn't seem to make sense?
I think if it had been thought out, there would be a completely separate worksheet for shared parenting.
But no, they looked at shared parenting, and they said, yeah, we're just going to use a worksheet.
They sort of bunched it all together.
Yeah.
And this push came out, I found the courts in Northwest Ohio saying split custody versus shared parenting, and the semantics of the language was a struggle at first. And I just don't think that it was, like I say, well thought out several years ago, and now it's coming to a head because we have more and more of these cases, and really, like I say, Northwest Ohio, we go to Williams County, handle things different, and Lewis, Defiant, handle things different than Lucas. And that's just not fair to the human part.
Don't the additional discretionary factors make it easy for the court to give a credit in the situation Justice Stratton described, but then adjust accordingly to those particular circumstances?
The court has an option to do it. The problem is we could have 88 separate opinions in 88 counties if you could find couples that had the same circumstances. And so again, it becomes almost child support by geography because it's subjective factors you're looking at versus objective. And if we can come up with a system that is objective, it just seems to be much more equitable, much more workable.
Well, that's why the case is here.
Exactly.
We're going to work on that. We're just trying to get to how we're going to do it.
So wouldn't we have someone to determine the best interest of the child in all those 88 counties, and wouldn't we be more assured that the spirit of the statute is met, that there is a hearing and that is determined, and not just to be automatic?
Yeah, I think the Beard case out of Orange County sort of addresses that, in that looking at that first, if we have automatic adjustment,
but it seems like
we're
missing the best interest of the child theory in the statute, aren't we? We make it automatic. Who's determining whether that is in the best interest of the child in that case? It may not be.
What we are proposing is that it first becomes automatic with the court not having to make trial court. Having to make a finding of fact unless they move off of the automatic adjustment. Otherwise, we're going to have in each and every case the trial judge or magistrate make a finding of fact whether there is a deviation or not. If it's automatic, they can review that, but only issue a finding of fact if they deviate off the automatic.
So what is your argument then about how someone would challenge, assuming that we went with an automatic credit and the trial court doesn't find any deviation, so there's no findings of fact to substantiate the deviation, how then does the parent with less income present the case on appeal that the trial court should have found a deviation?
that hearing in front of the judge, well, it's from a magistrate, obviously, you can file an objection and take it to the next level of the trial judge. They would need to present
evidence on the B6 factors or the extraordinary circumstances.
Exactly.
That would be so compelling that the appeals court.
Mr. McManus.
Good morning, Your Honors. With all due respect to the courts and the other party, I feel that there's nothing wrong with the statute. And until I was in the hallway this morning, I almost basically seemed to understand better and clearer. 3113.215C doesn't contradict the B section. It basically tells us that if you take away the language of who's a residential parent, basically tells us that when we have sole custody, when we get to that line, we ignore the child support obligation to the person who has custody. It isn't worded that way, but that's what it's saying. It basically starts out by stating, except when parents have split parental rights and responsibilities. So it's saying, except when they have split parental rights and responsibilities, it's something different. But when we don't have split parental rights, then the person that has custody, we don't include their child support obligation in that line 24. It further states that when we do have split parental rights and responsibilities, then we can do automatic deviation that they're talking about. And that's where you subtract one child support obligation from the other child support obligation. 3109.4, which talks about the residential parent, everybody's in a shared parent, everybody's a residential parent and legal custodian. It starts out with, unless the context clearly requires otherwise. Well, as the Sixth District noted, the context clearly requires otherwise. Otherwise, in every shared parent, there would be no child support. They would just offset each other, and that's ridiculous. It doesn't make sense of the computation. Further, if there's no automatic deviation, then every court has to make a decision, as the court's ruled and as the statute states, that it's rebuttably presumed to be correct. Further, they're not allowed to deviate unless they state in the judgment entry that it would be unjust and inappropriate and list the reason for that deviation.
Let me just stop you there. I'm sorry, but you said it doesn't make any sense that they would net out and neither parent would provide child support. That does make sense in some instances, does it not? Assume both parents have high salary jobs, and they say, "I don't need any support from you. I don't need any support from you." That does happen, doesn't it? Can that be what the General Assembly might have intended? I mean, there are a lot of cases where that's probably not true. But to say that's something that we never would do that's not accurate, is it?
No, and the courts can take that. Every case can be handled individually, and they give you A to P reasons why you can deviate, and then a catch-all any other relevant factors. So that would be a relevant factor, but parties don't need support, and therefore they should just not order support. That could certainly be a bother in the case where you have a physician that's making $250,000 in his custody. They agree to share parenting, but since he might have the children most of the time, he agrees not to ask for the child support from the other party, the other parent, who might only be making $30,000 or $40,000.
Counsel, if we adopted the appellant's approach to this, how are you going to counsel or advise clients who are going to be the custodial parent?
They'd come into your office and say, divorce. Right now,
and we've heard about this shared parenting thing. Sounds like a neat idea, and we'd like to do it.
Because it's scary. And the husband's supposed to keep using the husband. One parent's supposed to pay $10,000, the other's supposed to pay $4,000, and the other's $6,000. And they're not taking the children anymore in sole custody. It's just basically shared parenting, but no different timeshare than sole custody. And then you lose $4,000 a year. Why would you ever suggest that to a client?
What if the time is a little more equal? I mean, there are some...
AEP, and we can list, one parent is having a child 60% of the time, another 40, and the standard sole custody could be two-thirds and one-third, but now that we've got 60-40 or 50-50 or whatever the numbers are, then that's a reason to be. And that's something that's easily available. Because it's supposed to stay during the term, we're deviating, this is why we feel it's not in the best interest of the children now.
In this case, the husband had, by the testimony, the kids a lot more than the court order allowed for.
I think the trial court thought that was an aberration over a small period of time that the wife moved and he had the children twice or time. If you look at the shared parenting thing, he basically has no more time than standard sole.
Right, shared, if you look at the plan itself, which is the legal basis for the child support order provision, the plan itself is pretty much your standard every other weekend, night here and there sort of plan. It's not the father has 50% and the mother has 50%, correct?
Correct. And I think that's in keeping with shared parenting plan. It's not necessarily 50-50.
So shared parenting doesn't mean each parent has a 50% time. Shared parenting can mean a whole range of things, but the proposition that is being made by the other side is if it's called shared parenting, you get an automatic 50% reduction. Is that correct?
I don't think they're saying on that 50% reduction. They're saying do it like split parenting. And that's exactly what they're saying. They're saying look at split parenting and subtract them from the other. Where that's not what we're doing. And we're not doing split parenting. So I disagree with that argument.
This originated as a motion for an increase in child support and was decided really on the basis of a change in circumstances. Is that significant to our consideration of these issues?
I would say no. The court felt there was a change of circumstances because I think the finding was the husband made would have been more than a 10% deviation.
I think the finding was that the mother's living circumstances had changed and had increased dramatically within the 3-month period of time.
But it also related to the fact that there being a greater than 10% circumstances has to be greater than 10% deviation of child support or finance child support on this level. So since the deviation of 10% emotional problem, they were supporting or even getting
follow counsel, how you said C could be reconciled with D6.
Okay. I'm so confused. But if you look at the guidance, sheets of paper basically say sole custody and shared parent. Then we get down to line 24, and each one has a obligation. Line C, section C, stating, unless it's sole custody, the person that has custody, basically, we ignore their obligation in order. So it's very easy to understand when you have your sole custody. Because there's two words, you know, basically, one parent is supposed to provide, the other parent is supposed to provide. This section is saying this parent is supposed to provide, if they have custody, then that's presumably spending the children, and they don't work. And the split, they subtract the two. And in the share, their argument is, could be, and if we're trying to understand, you know, and share everybody's residence with parents, so therefore what do we do? Well, again, I refer to unless the context clearly requires otherwise. Clearly, just because we have shared parenting, we shouldn't just write and say they're from the child. That doesn't make sense to me.
Thank you, Mr. McManus. Mr. Robinson, you've used your time, but take 30 seconds if you'd like. Thank you. The case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion. The marshal, please adjourn court.